You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Greetings, everyone. Coach Jen here, and thanks for tuning in to Horse Tip Daily, episode 1648. Today, we are sharing an excerpt from the monthly American Horse Council episode on Horses in the Morning, and it's all about New World Screwworm. Say that three times fast. And it is gleaned not from social media outlets, but reliable official resources. And today's show is brought to you by Sentinel Horse Nutrition. Sentinel Horse Feed knows you share a unique bond with your horse and that you do anything to keep them happy and healthy, including having their teeth taken care of. Just like you're dedicated to your horse's well-being, Sentinel Horse Nutrition's expert nutritionists are dedicated to creating feed that supports their health. To learn more or find a dealer near you, visit Sentinel Horse Nutrition at feedsentinel.com/podcast. That's feedsentinel.com/podcast.
So for this episode, we wanted to leave listeners with an update on an issue that continues to be top of mind across the animal, agricultural, and equine communities, and that is New World Screwworm. We've mentioned it before, but in light of the recent developments and some of the cases, we needed to talk about it once again.
And what a coincidence that one of our sponsors today makes fly spray. just thinking about that. And, you know, I'm sorry to say this won't be as brief as some of our other legislative topic updates. So please bear with us. Please keep listening because this information is really, really important. It's become especially important because for the first time since the 1960s, when the United States eradicated New World Screwworm, we have it back. There are now multiple confirmed detections within the United States.
And while those detections may seem sudden, the reality is that animal health officials have been watching this situation closely for years.
Yes. So after it was eradicated from the United States, screwworm basically remained confined pretty far down in South America, down below the Darien Gap in Panama. So if you kind of think of like where South America attaches to North America, they were really below that little essentially land bridge. And since, you know, 2022-ish, we've been monitoring its gradual movement northward through Central America from Panama and eventually up into Mexico. So as the pest moved closer to the U.S. border, federal and state animal health officials, livestock groups like us here at the Horse Council, we really work to increase our outreach and education efforts and prepare or do our best to prepare.
So I think it's fair to say that while the recent U.S. detections are concerning, they aren't entirely unexpected.
Yes, correct. So this is a situation that state animal health officials and federal animal health officials have been preparing for. And that's one reason it's important for horse owners to stay informed and kind of really understand what makes screwworm different from other pests, other flies you may encounter.
Well, one thing that's important to clarify right away, and we're sorry that this is a really yucky kind of conversation, is that screwworm isn't the same thing as the maggots or the botflies that many horse owners are familiar with.
Right. So, again, you might not want to be eating your lunch while listening to this, but most maggots feed on dead or decaying tissue. And botflies, which many of us are familiar with, kind of stick in one spot on the horse, like a little cyst. But New World screwworm is different because the larva, the maggots, feed on living things, living tissue. What happens is the female fly is attracted to any kind of open wound and lays eggs. And when those eggs hatch, the larva then feed on the healthy tissue from the open wound. And this causes wounds to become much larger and more severe over time. You know, they can get very easily infected. They can kill the animal because they get so large. And the other issue is that the maggots, the larva, burrow deep. So you don't necessarily see the larva, just the wound.
Ugh. The pictures are awful. And while a lot of the headlines focus on cattle, horses are absolutely susceptible. Any wound, from a small cut or a scrape to a surgical incision, castration site, a full belly button, or even an insect bite that becomes irritated can potentially attract screwworm flies,
So one thing horse owners should be doing, especially if your horses live outside, is checking wounds daily and contacting your veterinarian if you notice anything unusual. So this would be wounds that don't seem to heal, if they have kind of excessive drainage, they're wet, they have foul odors, you know, irritation, visible larvae or maggots in the wound. You need to contact someone immediately.
One thing that's encouraging is that this isn't a new threat. We've dealt with screwworm before, and we know how to fight it.
Yes, it's treatable and preventable, and we can get rid of it. And so the main thing we do is we fight the adult flies using something called the sterile insect technique.
Sounds like something like right out of a sci-fi movie.
It really is. So what happens is scientists, little fly farmers, raise millions of male screwworm flies, zap them with radiation, and then release them into affected areas. So what happens is when females, wild females, mate, they mate once, they lay their eggs, and then they die. So when they mate with sterile males, they then lay eggs that are not fertilized, so they don't produce offspring, and then they die. And so over time, that causes the screwworm population to decline and eventually disappear.
So instead of trying to eliminate every individual fly, we're preventing future generations from being produced.
Exactly. And it's a proven strategy. And it remains really the most important tool being used today all over South America and Central America, and now once again in the United States. So along with the sterile fly technique, we also have surveillance, so traps in the area to see if we're catching adult flies. We have animal inspections, livestock and wildlife animal inspections. The USDA tick riders and the Border Patrol tick riders are out there riding up and down to see if there's any affected livestock or wildlife. We have movement controls, so controlling how livestock are moving across the U.S.-Mexico border and in between states. And we also have what they're calling rapid response efforts, where teams of vets are going into areas with detections and treating livestock. And I think that is really important for folks to know. I think people get worried about reporting livestock with something like this because, you know, the big scary government's going to come in and euthanize all your animals. But that absolutely is not going to happen. If you report it, they're going to come in and they're going to treat your animal and they're going to fix your animal. And then they're going to start fighting the flies.
So speaking of that, what is the treatment? I mean, if a horse does get infected, what happens? And what does the treatment course of treatment look like?
So like I said, the good news is this is treatable, especially when they're identified early. Treatment usually involves a vet coming out and helping to remove the larvae or the maggots, thoroughly cleaning the wound, treating any infections present. And then there's medications to remove and eliminate any remaining larvae that are in the ivermectin family. And for horses, there's an emergency use authorization for an injectable version of ivermectin, as well as they're looking into making sure oral ivermectin is also effective. And then again, we treat secondary infections, so things like antibiotics and cleaning wounds and things like that. The really, really hard part is, and this is where we need a lot of kind of public support, is that there's not a lot of medication specifically for horses. So USDA and FDA are working to approve things quickly for all species, but sometimes horses get left out of that conversation. So things that work really well for cattle, we don't necessarily have the research behind to know if they're as effective for horses or if there's any other side effects. So we need to work really, really hard to make sure we're also getting appropriate products for horses as well.
So if an owner suspects screwworm, this isn't something that they should try to diagnose or treat on their own. What should they do?
No, absolutely not. So again, report. It benefits you and everybody in your area if you report a suspected screwworm case to your veterinarian and get help. Contact your vet immediately. It can be treated. Suspected cases also need to be reported to the animal health authorities in your state so they can drop sterile flies in your area. If you report, you get, you know, the army of bug fighters coming to your area and fighting the bugs on your behalf. So reporting really only helps you.
So one question we've heard a lot is, why does this matter to me if there aren't any cases near me, near my horse?
This is a great question, because for those of us that live above the Mason-Dixon line, we hopefully will never have to worry about having screwworm in our area. So screwworm has kind of a big environmental line that it follows. It doesn't like cold weather. And so for us in the northern states, our winters aren't very habitable for them. And however, even if you're nowhere near the affected area, the presence of screwworm is going to have major implications for how horses move around the country and around the world. So if, say, you're an Arabian and you want to go compete at Scottsdale this year or next year, you're going to have some big things to think about in terms of animal movement and travel.
Well, and I know the American Quarter Horse Association is having its versatility finals right now. The Professional Rodeo Cowboy folks have a number of events that take place down in the southern half of the country. So as those horses are moving from, even from, say, up north, down south, and then they want to come back home, you're transiting through a lot of states, and all the states have different guidelines as to what the rules are for coming and going. But the most important thing is we want to prevent the pest from spreading into new areas. So you need to stay on top of what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. And so for things like, we have Calgary Stampede happening in July. There's dozens of competitors in Texas that usually go up to compete in that. But Canada is not currently accepting horses that have been in Texas within 21 days. So there's some thinking about that in terms of, can you go quarantine your horse somewhere within the time period before you go to Calgary? But yeah, depending on the situation, movement requirements can change too. So state health officials might require inspections before you can move your horse, health certificates before you can move your horse. Some states have treatment requirements, preventative treatment requirements, or just treatment if your horse has any wounds. There's a lot of different protocols that could be implemented to help reduce risk. Interstate movement can be limited, so I don't want people to think this is only an international movement thing. States can decide if they don't want to allow horses from other states to visit if their state is a screwworm-infested state. We already mentioned the U.S.-Mexico border. That is currently closed to all livestock going either direction, nothing in or out of Mexico, driving across the border. And again, we mentioned the Canadian restrictions too. So if you are looking to travel anywhere, you need to think ahead.
So I'm going to repeat what she said, folks, which is, it doesn't matter if you're showing, you're racing, you're breeding, you're buying, you're selling, you're importing, you're exporting, or transporting horses. This is something worth keeping on your radar.
Yeah, even just transiting through a state, if you're transporting horses, states can have different requirements just for transiting horses. So because movement requirements can change really quickly, the American Horse Council is working with other partners to create a searchable table of state-by-state movement and regulatory updates related to screwworm. So once available, that resource is going to be hosted on the American Horse Council's screwworm webpage. And also through the Equine Disease Communication Center. The goal is to provide one location where people can quickly find current movement requirements, regulatory updates, and guidance from their state affecting horse movement. And when I say your state, if you're traveling, you need to check the state you're leaving, the state you're going to, and any states you're going to pass through on the way there.
And one more thing I'd like to point out, folks, is we intend to make all of this available in English and in Spanish. So we are trying to cover all of our bases there. Emily, that's a good reminder that about where you go to find this information and why it matters.
Yes. And so we saw this with the EHV outbreak, right? Is that in situations like this, rumors and unverified reports spread very, very quickly on social media. So sometimes people hear about a possible detection or a rumored quarantine or a supposed movement restriction and share it before it's been confirmed. And that's why we really encourage horse owners to rely only on verified information from USDA APHIS, their State Department of Agriculture, their state animal health official, or any other trusted organizations working directly with these agencies. Don't just rely on your favorite horse influencer on Instagram or TikTok to tell you what's happening.
Yeah, and we will also want to put out there, Before changing your travel plans or canceling an event or sharing information with others, it's worth taking a few minutes to make sure the information came from an official source. The page at thehorsecouncil.org/screwworm includes educational materials, updates that we've gotten, frequently asked questions, horse-specific resources, and links to trusted information sources.
And for the latest federal information, including response efforts, current detections maps, outbreak maps for counties, and updates on eradication activities, we tell people to visit screwworm.gov, which is, again, the federal USDA website.
The bottom line is that this is a challenge we know how to address, but success does depend on awareness, vigilance, and cooperation from everyone involved with animal health.
And staying informed, monitoring horses for wounds, even if they're living out on the range, go check them every day. Working with your veterinarian, making sure your vet knows what they need to be looking out for, and also following movement requirements to make sure you are not the one accidentally spreading screwworm, all play an important role in protecting horses and preventing further spread.
One more thought that occurred to me, Emily, if you would, what kind of timeline do you project we're on for eradication of screwworm? We've heard a bunch of different ideas floating around the industry, especially in social media, as you mentioned before. What's the official projection?
So the official projection is this is a long game. There is no short game here. The sterile fly technique can take several years to push it all back down into South America. And we're also in the middle of building a new factory to make more sterile flies, right? USDA has told us to prepare to make sure we're ready to keep fighting this through next spring. And then it's just going to keep kind of cycling until those sterile flies get done. So this is not like something like an EHV outbreak where it's all wrapped up within a couple weeks once all of the horses, sick horses are tracked down. This is something that's in the environment, and we need to be aware of monitoring for this and checking movement restrictions for years to come at this point.
We're going to continue to monitor developments and share updates as new information becomes available. And as always, if you'd like to learn more about today's topics or finding additional resources, visit us at horsecouncil.org.
Well, there you have it. Horse Radio Network has thousands of engaging podcasts for horse people, and you can have them sent right to your phone. Just subscribe via your favorite podcast player. This is Coach Jen, and I will be back again soon with another tip. Until then, go ride your horse. The Horse Radio Network and the Horse Radio Network hosts are not responsible for statements made by guests on the Horse Tip Daily. Please use your own judgment when listening to the tips on this show.